Chapter 43. Karina was stretched out on the bed, staring at the ceiling for lack of anything better to do, when she heard a soft knocking. She investigated and found that someone had left a wicker basket with her clothes outside the door. She picked up the note from on top of the neatly folded pile. "Dear Ms. McCarty, please join me for dinner at your convenience. V.B." "How absolutely civilized," she murmured as she shut the door. Karina couldn't get the white dress off fast enough. Wearing her own clothes gave her a sense of control. She knew that it was only an illusion, but it felt good anyhow. She reread the note. She would have preferred not to spend another second with Baltazar, but she knew that he held the key to her fate. She threw her shoulders back and marched down the deserted hall to the courtyard. A guard was waiting to escort her to the other wing. She was ushered into a spacious dining room done in a Spanish motif. The walls were pale stucco, edged with colorful tile and decorated with wall hangings. Tall terracotta urns were tucked into the corners. The valet appeared and seated Karina at a leather-topped table with wrought iron legs. The table was set for two and illuminated with ornate iron candelabra. Baltazar arrived a minute later, dressed in black tie, as if for a formal ball. "Miss McCarty, how nice of you to join me," he said with the warmth of old acquaintance. Karina smiled without humor. "Did I have a choice?" "We all have choices, Miss McCarty." Baltazar snapped his fingers, and the valet filled their wine glasses with a hearty Rioja. He raised his glass in a silent toast and didn't seem bothered when she ignored the gesture. She picked at her salad and the fragrant paella that was the main course. She pushed away the flan dessert, but sipped at her espresso. They ate their meal in silence, like an old married couple with nothing left to say to each other. Baltazar asked how she had enjoyed the meal and the wine. Karina answered with a grunt. "Good," he said. He produced a thin cigar, which he lit, keeping his eyes on Karina the whole time. "I have a question," Baltazar said, his head hidden behind a cloud of purple smoke. "Do you believe in divine destiny?" "I don't know what you mean." "I'm talking about the concept that the course of our lives is dictated not so much by our acts, but by our fate." "Predestination is not a philosophy that is original with you." She looked him straight in the eye. "I believe that we are all responsible for the consequences of our behavior. If you jump out of a window on a tall building, the consequence will be your death."
"You are quite correct. Our acts do affect our lives. But I must ask you to ponder the unfathomable forces that would make me want to jump out of a window."
"What are you getting at?" Karina said.
"It's very difficult to put into words. I can show you better than tell you."
"Do I have a choice?"
"In this case, no," he said,
rising from his seat. He snuffed the cigar out in an ashtray and came around to pull her chair back. Then he escorted her to the portrait gallery.
"These are some of my forebears," Baltazar said. "Do you see the family resemblance?"
Karina gazed at the dozens of paintings that hung on the walls of the large room. Most of the men had been painted wearing decorative armor. While the faces in the portraits often differed physically, many, including the women, possessed Baltazar's wolfish gleam in their eyes, as if predatory instincts had been passed on in their genes.
"Yes," she said, "there are definite family characteristics." "This lovely lass was a countess," he said, going over to the 18th century oil of the young matron. "She's quite special." He put his face inches from the portrait and pressed the carved panels to either side. Karina thought he was kissing the painting.
Noting the bewildered expression on Karina's face, he explained about the eye and hand scans. He guided her down the stairway to the steel door with its combination lock. The door swung open. Karina was surprised to see the glass-enclosed cabinets that lined the walls.
"It looks like a library," she said.
"This room holds the family archives of the Balthazars. These volumes contain our history going back for more than 2,000 years. This is a treasure trove of intrigue in Europe and Asia during that time." He went to the far end of the library and opened another door. He removed a torch from a wall sconce and lit it with his cigarette lighter. The flare from the torch illuminated the curved stone walls of a circular room. Karina stepped into the room and saw the statue beckoning at her with outstretched arms.
"Dear God, what is that thing?"
"It's an ancient offering statue. It has been in my family for thousands of years." Her eyes took in the pointed nose and chin and the leering mouth, features made even more prominent by the leaping shadows from the fluttering torch.
"It's hideous."
"Some people might think so. But beauty is in the eye of the beholder. It's not the statue I wanted to show you. It's this volume." Balthazar stuck the torch into a tall metal stand and went up to the altar. He lifted the lid of the gem-studded chest and opened the wooden box inside it. Then he removed the bound sheets of parchment. Karina didn't want to satisfy Balthazar by showing interest, but she couldn't contain her curiosity.
"They look very old," she said.
"Nearly 3,000 years old. The language is Aramaic. The pages were written in the time of King Solomon."
"Who was the author?" Karina said.
"The founding matriarch of the Balthazar family. Her name is lost in time. She refers to herself and is referred to by others as priestess. Would you like to hear what she wrote?"
Karina shrugged. "I have nothing better to do."
"I can recite the contents by heart. She introduces herself here on the first page. She was a pagan priestess who was a favored concubine to Solomon. They gave birth to a boy child who was named Melkart. As I said before, Solomon was a fickle man. He became smitten with Sheba."
"My ancestor," Karina said.
"That's right. They had a boy whom they named Menelik. Solomon gave the priestess to Sheba to be her handmaiden. She had little choice but to obey. The boys grew up together, but Menelik remained the favored son. When they were teenagers, Melkart, at the bidding of his mother, persuaded his half-brother to steal a treasured object from the temple. Menelik eventually returned it, and both boys were forgiven by their father, but he enlisted them into the Phoenician navy through his friend Hiram."
"What was this treasured object?"
"The Ark of the Covenant. More important, the original Ten Commandments that were contained in the Ark.
The clay tablets Moses brought down from the Mount."
"No. These were of gold. In the Bible, they are referred to as the golden calf. Moses is said to have destroyed them, but that was not the case."
"Why would he want them destroyed?"
"The tablets were written when the old religions were in flux. The tablets would have caught people's attention before Moses could sway them in the direction of the religion he was preaching."
"Apparently, the tablets were not destroyed."
"They were hidden until the time of Solomon. He saw them as potential trouble, but feared destroying such sacred objects.
He worried that the tablets might be stolen again. He told Menelik to take the Ten Commandments to Ophir and hide them. The priestess sent Melkart to retrieve the golden tablets. The half-brothers fought. Menelik killed his half-brother and made it home to tell his father of the battle. Solomon banished Melkart's mother, whom he suspected of stirring up his subjects against him and reviving the old pagan religion. Where does the navigator come in? The priestess learned through her informants that Solomon ordered two statues of Menelik cast and inscribed the bronze statues with maps that would show the way to Ophir and the tablets. A more detailed map, written on vellum, was lost during the brotherly battle. Why two statues? Solomon was cautious as well as wise. He had them placed at the gates to his temple, hidden in plain sight. And the priestess? In exile, she seethed with anger at the death of her only son at the hands of Menelik, Sheba's offspring. She felt that she should have been the wife of Solomon, and that the Ten Commandments and the power they brought were rightfully hers. She entrusted Melkart's son with the task of recovering the treasure and exacting revenge on the descendants of Solomon and Sheba. He failed, but passed the instructions down to the next generation. As the years passed, the prime goal became recovery of the tablets before anyone knew of their existence. A system of watchers was set up worldwide to report any mention of the commandments. What is your role in all this? My father passed the task on to me. As the last of the Balthazars, it falls on my shoulders to carry out the pledge made centuries ago. So that's it. You will take your revenge for this priestess, who is now a bag of dust. You believe I am descended from Sheba and intend to kill me. I would rather not. I have a proposal. I wish to carry on the Balthazar bloodline. What better way to do it than to merge our two bloodlines into one? A stunned expression came to Karina's blue eyes. You can't be serious. You think that I... I'm not talking about a love match, Balthazar said. Consider it a business proposition. And will you make it your business to kill me once I have produced your so-called heir? That depends entirely on you. Then kill me now. The thought of your touch revolts me. She attempted to get by him. He stepped in to bar the way. She turned instinctively, looking for a place to run. Her glance fell on the statue's face, which was illuminated in the flickering torchlight. The statue. I remember now. I saw one like it in Rome. It was taken from Carthage during the Punic Wars. The Carthaginians used it to sacrifice children to Baal when the Romans attacked the city. That's why your sainted priestess was exiled. She practiced human sacrifice. Solomon was a hypocrite, Balthazar snapped. He worshipped the old gods, but when his priests rose up against him, he gave in to them. I don't want anything to do with you or your vile gods. I want you to let me go. That's not possible. A wicked gleam came to Karina's eye. She snatched up the torch from its stand and stuck it in Balthazar's face. He laughed at the show of defiance. Put that thing down before I take it away from you. If you won't let me go, I will destroy your wonderful priestess. She whirled around and brought the torch close to the bound parchment pages on the altar. Balthazar's hand moved with the speed of a cobra. He snatched the torch from her hand before the dry pages caught fire, and his fist slammed her in the face. She crumpled to the floor, unconscious. Balthazar looked up at the statue. The slanting almond eyes glittered in the light. The arms reached out as if they wanted to embrace him. He glanced down at Karina's limp body, then up at the silent statue again. He cocked his head as if he were listening. "Yes," he said after a moment. "Now I understand."